I'm Mark Bayshore. Thank you for joining us here on Wednesday's Current State. On September 4th, 1957, nine African-American students in Little Rock, Arkansas, showed up for their first day of school at the all-white Central High School. But when they got to the school, a line of Arkansas National Guard soldiers stood blocking their entrance. The refusal of Arkansas Governor Orville Faubus to integrate Central High School led President Dwight D. Eisenhower to intervene in Little Rock.
Local authorities have not eliminated that violent opposition. And under the law, I yesterday issued a proclamation calling upon the mob to disperse. This morning, the mob again gathered in front of the Central High School of Little Rock, obviously for the purpose of again preventing the carrying out of the court's order relating to the admission of Negro children to that school.
Eisenhower issued an executive order putting the National Guard troops under federal control and sent in U.S. Army soldiers to control violent mobs of white residents opposed to integration. Ernest Green was one of the Little Rock Nine who eventually integrated Central High School. He would be the first black student to ever graduate from the school before going on to Michigan State University. Mr. Green's in East Lansing this week to speak as part of the Slavery to Freedom lecture series. I had the chance to sit down with him yesterday to discuss that historic moment in Little Rock. I first asked him how he decided in the weeks leading up to the start of school that he wanted to be one of the Little Rock Nine.
Well, actually, it started long before that. The Little Rock School Board made a decision to desegregate the schools in 1957. This was 3 years after the Supreme Court decision of Brown versus the Board of Education. And I was an 11th grader. They asked those students who lived in the Central District who were interested in transferring to simply sign a sheet of paper. This was the spring of 1957. So that summer, had not paid a lot of attention to the process that was going on. In fact, I was away from the process, how they determined students that they were going to allow to transfer. But my aunt was a guidance counselor. I'd been in the school system for a long while. Somewhere midsummer, I had a summer job. She indicated to me that I was one of the students being considered by the school board to transfer to Central that fall. And the numbers were much larger than nine. There were probably that spring at maybe 7,500 students who said they were interested in transferring. As we got closer to that time period, and I think it became obvious that this was something that the governor, Orville Faubus, was going to fight or resist, then the numbers started to dwindle. And somewhere midsummer, we found out that there were only nine of us. And I was the only one that was in the senior class. The others were spread in the 10th and 11th grades. But it was a decision that I wanted to do. I had tremendous support from my family. But it also, this was an atmosphere that changes were starting to occur around the South. The Montgomery bus boycott was the winter of 1955-56. University of Arkansas had admitted a few black students in the law school and in the medical school. The buses in Little Rock had desegregated without incident, public library. So my expectations were that while there would be some concern and probably some reaction from a few people, I didn't expect it to be widespread.
Once you and your family learned that Governor Faubus might resist this, did you have any second thoughts about transferring to Central?
No, I didn't have any second thoughts about it. I didn't think he was going to call out the National Guard. During the course of that summer, I had a job as a locker room attendant at a country club, and had established, you know, friendship with a couple of members' kids who were my age. And I was sort of surprised when the local newspaper finally identified who the students that were going to transfer. My name was appeared in the local paper. This fellow came in. He was very upset and agitated that I was one of the students that was going to go to Central that fall. And it began to dawn on me that this was maybe a little bit bigger than I had expected initially. But up until the first day of school, we had no idea that the governor was going to use troops to keep us out of the school.
And then September 4th arrives, and you, along with eight other students, show up at school only to be sent home by National Guard soldiers guarding the doors to the high school. What do you remember most vividly from that day?
Well, it was obviously fairly chaotic that day. A lot of media attention. We went to school with, physically went to school with the help and assistance of the NAACP and a group of ministers, a biracial group of ministers. And what I remember was that there were actual soldiers there with bayonets, and that when we tried to enter the school, they blocked our entrance, but they let the white students continue on through the doors to Central. And after probably 45 minutes of trying to get in and being resisted, the adults who were with us said, you know, this is going to be futile right now. Let's go back to Mrs. Bates' house. Mrs. Bates was the president of the Arkansas NAACP at that time, and also a publisher of a weekly newspaper in Little Rock. So at that moment, we decided that we weren't going to be able to get in. We went back to Mrs. Bates' house, and the strategy for the NAACP was to go back into court and to enjoin Governor Faubus from blocking our entrance and see if we could get back into school. It turned out that this process lasted for over 3 weeks. And eventually, as you know, the pictures and all show the riots that broke out in front of the school during those 3 weeks. Finally, President Eisenhower had to send the 101st Airborne, the United States Army, into Little Rock to provide protection for us.
When you and the other eight students were finally allowed to begin school at Central, did you have a sense of what a historic moment that was?
Well, we knew it was historic. I mean, I would not be telling the truth if I said I would expect 55 years later, I'm still talking about my getting into high school. I didn't see that picture, but we understood that, you know, this was breaking a barrier. I had seen the impact of the Montgomery bus boycott. Jackie Robinson was a personal hero of mine. I remember well his breaking into Major League Baseball. It turned out that one of the students that had desegregated the school, the medical school at the University of Arkansas, lived in my neighborhood and had a chance to talk to him about what kind of impact his experiences were making on him and how he stayed ahead of his studies and how hard it was to concentrate on trying to complete his studies. But I thought that once we got into the school, that things would probably normalize a lot more than they were. But I was wrong about that. It didn't turn out to be a normal year, but I'm proud and glad that I was able to be a part of it.
Could you talk to us about what your parents were saying and how they felt at the time? I mean, were they ever scared to send you to school? You had to be sent around with a personal armed guard, I understand.
Well, we went from class to class with the initial first 2 months with individual guards going through the hall with us. My mother and my aunt, my grandfather, my dad had passed by the time I went to Central, were very supportive of my being there. If there was ever a moment in which they were frightened or afraid for my safety, they didn't tell me about it. And I think, you know, it was because they had a view that this was something that I wanted to do. They were supportive of me. But they also knew that this was something that was necessary to make a change in how African Americans were viewed and what the opportunities were growing up in Little Rock.
We're talking to Ernest Green, an MSU alumnus and one of the Little Rock Nine. Mr. Green will be speaking at the Kellogg Auditorium on Thursday as part of the Slavery to Freedom lecture series put on by the MSU College of Osteopathic Medicine. There are these iconic photos from that day of white students and parents screaming at you and the other members of the Little Rock Nine as you attempted to enter the school building. What was it like in the classroom alongside people after that who you might have seen screaming racial slurs at you a week earlier? That sounds really uncomfortable.
Well, the classes were very well maintained. I can't think of a class in which students attempted to bring physical harm to me in the classroom when we got out into the hallway and to the cafeteria. Things changed, but one was I thought that the courses I was taking were mainly college prep courses, so that my fellow classmates were spending most of that time trying to master those classes. And as a senior, one of the great things about being a high school senior is you have real laser focus on graduating. And that became the paramount activity that most of my classmates focused on. There were probably very few incidents in which, in the class itself, that I had problems with my fellow classmates.
Did you see any change in the attitudes of any of those students as they got to know you and the other eight members of the Little Rock Nine, or did it continue to be a tense situation?
It was mainly a tense situation. There were a minority number of students who took it on themselves, or maybe they were organized to try to harass us, to verbal abuse. The bulk of the other students, while they were silent or didn't participate, very few came to our support. I point out that as I got closer to graduation, there were a few students, more students that came forward and began to indicate their pride in my being able to get through that year. And I pointed out to some friends some time ago, I went back for my 50th high school reunion, and I couldn't find anybody who was opposed to my being at Central, you know, given time and all that. But it was a very tense situation when we were there in 57.
Do any specific moments stand out to you about your time at Central? Any memory that's really stuck with you all these years, bad or good?
Most of it was trying to get through that year. Obviously, the thing that stands out most in my mind is graduation and being able to feel a sense of completion. And in addition to that, my graduation, unbeknownst to me during the graduation, but sitting with my family was Dr. King. And so I can make the comment that I'm one of the few people in the world that Martin Luther King attended his high school graduation.
What was it like for you and your family to have Dr. King at your graduation? Do you remember how you felt?
Well, I felt very prideful and proud. When I was going through the ceremony, I was unaware that he was sitting with my family. And after the graduation ceremony, he and I had time to chat a bit, and he indicated, you know, how proud he was of what I had accomplished. And we kept my mother kept a kind of diary of people who sent gifts, and listed in this book is a indication of a $15 check from M.L. King from Montgomery, Alabama. So I get asked all the time, did I cash the check? As a 16-year-old with graduation presents, that was a check that I wasn't saving. I cashed it right away.
And after you graduated from Central, you moved here to East Lansing. What was the transition from Arkansas to Michigan State like?
Well, I had an opportunity in between coming to MSU and graduation. I had a summer job in New York, and I was a big jazz aficionado. That summer, I got a chance to hear all the music that I ever, Thelonious Monk, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, and the list goes on.
How, at that age, were you able to take in all of these great concerts?
Well, I was I played in the high school band at Horace Mann, which was the black high school before I went to Central. Central, we were not allowed to have extracurricular activity. As it turned out, given all the activity that went on that year, it was probably a good thing that I didn't have extracurricular activities and that I could concentrate just on trying to get through my studies. But the summer, I couldn't get a job in Little Rock. Nobody would hire me. And the Ladies Garment Workers Union in New York put together a summer job for myself and one of the other nine, Terrence Roberts. And I knew that if I got to New York, I wanted to hear the music. I was a big collector of records as a teenager. And my first week in New York was also the month that Thelonious Monk was coming back to play at a club. Club was a five spot down in the East Village of New York. And I'm sure that we drank very little beer. We nursed a beer for 3 hours. there was no cover charge to get in to hear him. You only paid for the food and drink. I don't know if they had a minimum charge even there. But Monk came back. It was Monk. It was McCoy Tyner was on the piano with Coltrane. I saw one of the early dates that he had with Miles, Art Farmer, Art Blakey, you name it, we saw him. And, you know, I felt like I was, as they say in Arkansas, in hog heaven, that this was a way to spend my summer. So I came to Michigan State with a great grin on my face, having spent the summer listening to all of that great music.
Ernest Green is an MSU alum and one of the Little Rock Nine, the first African-American students to attend Little Rock Central High School in Arkansas. He'll be speaking at the Kellogg Auditorium on Thursday at 5 p.m. as part of the Slavery to Freedom Lecture Series put on by the MSU College of Osteopathic Medicine. We'll pick up with part two of our conversation with Ernest Green next Tuesday here on Current State.